Welcome everyone to Measure Evaluations Data Demand in Use webinar series. This is the fifth webinar in our series where we'll be presenting the framework for linking data with action. For those of you not familiar with Measure Evaluation, it is the USAID Global Health Bureau's primary vehicle for supporting improvements in monitoring and evaluation worldwide. Before we get started, I want to go over a couple of troubleshooting issues regarding participating in a webinar and the technology. If you lose connectivity at any time during the call, you can re-enter the meeting room by clicking on the webinar link that was provided in the original email that was sent out. If you have trouble with audio and you can't hear us here, you can refer to the conference call instructions that are in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. But please, if you do happen to call in to the call-in number, be sure to mute your telephone line as we pick up a lot of feedback here from people in their offices. If you're still having problems, you can send an email to leah.gordon@unc.edu. Here are a few tips for participating in the discussion. Because you don't have the ability to really chat and interact with us while we're presenting because there are so many participants, you can communicate with us by using the icon at the top of your screen. You'll see a person with his or her hand raised, and when you click on that, you can tell us a variety of different things. You can tell us to slow down, you can tell us to speak up, that we're speaking too loud and we need to speak more softly. You can even show us a little round of applause if you'd like. And later on when we get to the question and answers, you'll have the opportunity to type your questions into a question box, but you can also request access to the microphone and ask your question over the line. In that case, you would, if you have audio access on your computer, you would go to the top of the screen after raising your hand and click on the microphone to enable your mic, and then you'll be able to ask us a question. For any of you who really have a lot of problems and you just feel like you can't participate in the call because you're not hearing enough, all of these webinars are being recorded and they're available online at www.measureevaluation.org/DDU. Okay, so our agenda for today, we already went over the webinar tips. I'll be doing a very brief overview of data demand and use and what we mean by that. I know for those of you who have been on several of the other webinars, this will be repetitive for you, so you can maybe take this time to get a cup of coffee and come back. And then Tara Nutley will go ahead and present the tool, the framework for linking data with action, and then we have Nicole Judice with us to discuss field application of the tool. Then we'll have about 15 minutes for question and answers and wrap up. So let's go ahead and talk about, you know, what is this all about? Why do we improve data-informed decision-making? And, you know, we're all aware of challenges involved in providing quality health services where we work. In many countries, health programs are facing a high disease burden, an increasing population. We have inadequate numbers and poor distribution of qualified health workers and inadequate health systems to support the distribution of services. In these situations, and in the funding context that we're in now, it's extremely important to make the best use of these limited resources that we have available. The need to develop strategies, policies, and interventions based on quality data and information is critical. Here's a quote from a colleague of ours in Nigeria, who's a national lawyer. Allow our policies to be guided by empirical facts and data. There will be a noticeable change in the impact of what we do. So this, we just feel like, is an excellent quote that really depicts what we at Measure Evaluation mean by data demand and use. In many contexts, you hear people say, well, I wrote a report and I disseminated it, you know, through an email listserv, and they count that as data demand and use. And we define data demand and use much more broadly than that. We would say dissemination of a report and findings is not adequate and would not fit the definition of data demand and use. So what we mean by data use is that you actually use data that you have available, and it can be data from a health information system, from an M&E system, from a research study that's being conducted, and you use those data in the decision-making process. So you can use that data to monitor a program and see if you're on track or off track and what changes you're going to make as a result. You can use it to create data to create or revise a program or strategic plan, to develop or revise a policy. You can use it to advocate for a policy or program, or to allocate resources. So you can use it in funding applications, for example, or grant proposals. Data demand is different. This is where we define this as when decision makers specify what kind of information they want and seek it out. And this is a big goal of what we at Measure Evaluation try to do. We believe, and we'll talk more about this in the next slide, that when demand is created, when decision makers say, in order to make this decision, we need information and data, that it's more likely that we'll be generating good quality data to answer those questions. So I'm going to go ahead and use my arrow here to talk a little bit about this framework that you see. So when we talk about improving the use of and demand for data in decision making, we talk about it as a cycle, and you can see that depicted here. It's not just a one-time event. So this framework here starts with basic M&E systems and the collection of information. You can see my green arrow is next to collection. So this includes ensuring that the information is available and in a format that is easily understood by relevant stakeholders. So once you collect the data, making it available to the individual stakeholders so that it can be interpreted and used to improve programs and policies. So we really want to get to that utilization piece, which we talked about. The cycle supports the assumption that the more positive experiences a decision maker has in using information to support a decision, the stronger the commitment will be to improving data collection systems and continuing to use the information they generate. This leads to repeated data use. And this gets back to the demand. So it's like I was talking about on the last slide. When we collect the data, we make it available, and it's utilized, and then people have a good experience in using that information to make decisions, it leads to increased demand for more of that information from the system. So you can see how there's this whole cycle. But you'll also note that in the outside orange ring, it's supported. This cycle is all supported by coordination over here and collaboration, where my other arrow is. And what we mean by that is the coordination is among data users and data producers, as well as between management systems and other organizational supports that facilitate and support data-informed decision making. And I just want to speak briefly about what we mean by data users and data producers. Data users are the people who make decisions. So they could be program staff, they might be policymakers, they could be an executive director of an organization. And when we talk about data producers, those are the people who are generating information that would go, you know, into making decisions. So, for example, M&E officers, it could be researchers, and other people who are actually involved in collecting data. And it's very important to have those two groups of people working together to increase data demand and use. Lastly, the cycle is supported by improving capacity to ensure that all individuals are equipped with the skills to collect and use data. All of these supports are important to ensure the cycle continues functioning to create a culture of data use. So I have one last slide here that shows how do we improve data demand and use. As you know, today we're presenting one of our tools that we have available, but we believe you need to use a comprehensive approach to improve data demand and use in any organization or for a specific program. So we believe that first you have to build upon a commitment and ongoing efforts to improve monitoring and evaluation and information system. That is the foundation of all data use improvement interventions. If there's not an existing M&E system, it's unlikely that you'll have any kind of active data use strategies. Then we believe at the top of the framework here, that you identify and engage data users and data producers. And I talked about that in the last slide. These two groups don't always work closely together in a typical situation. For data use to function, as we saw in the previous slide, you have to have regular collaboration between these two groups so that the data producers can meet the demands of the data users. And we have three different areas of interventions. You can apply tools, many of which we're addressing in these webinars. You can build capacity within organizations and strengthen organizational systems to support data-informed decision-making. So most of our sessions have involved tool application, but our last one in this seven-part series will be on capacity building. We'll be taking time to review all of the different training materials that we have available for data demand and use, and at a later date we'll be discussing organizational support in a webinar. So I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Tara Nutley, who will talk about the framework for linking data with action.
Good morning, everybody. I'm happy to be here to talk about this specific tool in our toolkit. This is a tool that I have used on multiple occasions and find it extremely helpful, one of the true foundations in our toolkit. So the framework for linking data with action. What this tool does, it's a very simple matrix that helps people to kind of implement some of the core data demand and use strategies. So what it does is it creates a time-bound plan for data-informed decision-making. It encourages greater use of existing information. It monitors the use of information in decision-making. And with repeated use, it really functions as a management tool to really support the cycle of data-informed decision-making. What we see a lot in our day-to-day lives is we spend so much time and effort collecting quality information. There's a lot that goes into good functioning M&E systems. So we tend to underutilize our data. So this framework really helps us to identify specific data that can be applied in decision making or identify specific information needs that we can then map back to existing data. So it, at the root of it, it really helps us to use underutilized information. And as I mentioned, if it is used repeatedly on an ongoing basis as a management tool, it really helps to build data use into your work. And it does this through establishing a mechanism, an opportunity for regular coordination and collaboration. Molly talked about the importance of bringing data users and data producers together and how these two groups of individuals don't always interact frequently or have an opportunity to do that. So this tool really provides the bridge between those two disciplines to enable people to engage in a regular dialogue. And when this happens, the data user and the data producer really, it helps them to understand the decisions that need to be made, the upcoming decisions that are facing program managers, and policymakers. And then it helps the data producers to explain the information that they have, what's available to the decision makers, so that there can be this match between the information that is needed and the information that exists. And then it's also a great way to ensure that that information that is used in decision making and the subsequent decision is shared back with those that will be affected by any kind of change in programming. So it's a great tool to really kind of jumpstart any data use effort. Now there's two versions for the framework for linking data with action. The first one is what we call the data version, and the second one is the decisions and questions version. So basically, which version you use depends on what you're trying to do. So for example, the first version you would use in an instance where you have data from a recent study, for example. Let's say there was a study on contraceptive behaviors among adolescents. And it was a great study, you know, lots of rich information, but for some reason that information, it was disseminated, perhaps at a big national dissemination meeting, but it never quite made its way into informing programs, most likely because of this disconnect between the data user and the data producer. So you could use the framework in that instance to try to encourage greater use of a specific set of data. Version two, you would use when you are faced with an upcoming decision. So for example, you know it's annual program planning time in your region, and you know that there are specific decisions around resource allocation or staffing or even where to implement a new pilot activity, a new pilot program. So you have specific decisions you need to make, and you need to figure out what you should do, what the decision-making course should be. So that's the question side. If you're about to make a decision, there are questions that inform decisions. So that's how when you would use version two. Let's take a look at what this tool looks like. As I mentioned earlier, it's a simple matrix. Here you see version one, where that you would use in the context of wanting to utilize a specific data source. So what this allows you to do is go through your findings. And first of all, link your finding with the research question. Every research activity has a primary research question and then secondary and subsequent research questions. So it's a great way to have your question, list the finding that goes along with it, and then, of course, you use this in a setting where you have your data users and your data producers present. You have your program managers, those that whose programs or policies would be affected by what is stated in the study findings. So you would then have this group discuss, come up with the recommendations that are obviously based on the findings, and you would list that there. And one thing that is particularly useful about this tool is I have been in multiple settings where you have what we call recommendation creep, where the individuals present get really excited about positive study findings but start making recommendations that might be good ideas but aren't necessarily linked to what the study is finding. So you're not really honing in on the true data-informed decision. So that is why these two columns are really critical. You know, they help you to link those two. Then, of course, once you have a recommendation, the next column would be the decision maker, other stakeholders column, where you would list the specific name of the decision maker that would act on the recommendation. So you'd put specific names to implicate individuals. And this part is critical as well, because this is where we see a breakdown. Many a time recommendations will be made based on study findings, but they never make it into the program change environment. And here, by linking that recommendation with a specific individual, you can at least be assured that what needs to be done is understood by the person that's supposed to do it. Then the next column is communication channel. And here is where you would identify how you would communicate the study findings. Sometimes when you are doing this sort of an exercise, the true decision makers might not be present. So you need to communicate what the study found to those individuals. So this is where you would indicate how you would do that. And lastly, there's the timeline. And in the timeline column, you would indicate when you would either A, prepare your communication materials, or B, hopefully make the decision that you're discussing. So there's a quick overview of the tool itself. Let's look at an example. Here we have a framework for linking data with action, version 1, that was completed. Mind you, this is just a portion of the full framework. That was completed based on the results of a study that was conducted in Ethiopia around a program that was aiming to communicate the effects of early marriage on young girls, health effects, psychological effects, etc. And there was a nonprofit that was implementing this program to educate women and men about this. There was a new law around age of marriage. So one of the primary research questions was, what is the level of exposure to these early prevention messages, specifically among the young girls? Of course, they had multiple target groups. And the findings were that 26% of females that were exposed to prevention messages heard them through the media, and 75% that were exposed heard them through non-media mechanisms. And those were, RL indicates religious leaders and PE indicates peer educators. So those were the two primary ways they were doing these prevention messages. And so the research question was listed, the finding was listed, and the recommendation was to increase dissemination messages through both those two non-media communication channels. And that was what the group recommended happen. And they listed their decision makers. You'll notice there were specific names listed there. The decision maker is the DM, and the OS were the other stakeholders affected, and they wanted to indicate who those individuals would be. And then they listed what their communication channel would be. They were having monthly meetings, and they were going to communicate the specific finding and recommendation at that in that venue and also through personal communication. And then the timeline was listed there. The second finding of the study was that the women reported hearing the messages, but they reported hearing the messages most frequently through the religious leaders. So when they took this subgroup of those that heard through religious leaders and peer educators, the finding was that the religious leaders were the most effective. So they decided to train additional religious leaders to be able to communicate these messages. And then their decision maker, their communication channel, their timeline, as you see listed here. So this is how this specific tool was used in relation to this one study that was done around early marriage prevention messaging. The second version that I talked about, this version focuses on decisions and questions. So there are moments where there are specific information needs facing decision makers. And this version helps to answer questions that respond to those immediate needs and priorities. And you'll note the picture here on the shelf, on the slide, all the data files kind of lined up on the desk, on the shelves. And I find this version to be extremely helpful because in an environment where we have so much data at our fingertips, it's sometimes overwhelming to kind of dig your way out and understand where to start. And to have a positive experience using data in decision making. And this tool helps you do that. It really helps you focus, and it helps you prioritize on your most pressing information needs. As I mentioned, it focuses on decisions and programmatic questions. At times, we have been faced with, you know, kind of a little bit of confusion around what's a decision, what's a programmatic question, so we have defined them here. A decision is a choice that leads to an action. So you're faced with two different opportunities that you could take. You have to make a choice. And all decisions are informed by questions, and all questions should be based on data. So an easy one to discuss would be, let's say it's time to go out the door in the morning and go to work. You need to make a decision about what you're going to wear. So you have some questions that will inform that decision. For example, what's the temperature? Is it hot? Is it cold? How hot is it? Is it raining? Do I need to bring an umbrella? What is on my agenda for the day? Do I have a meeting with a minister at work today, or am I just going to the office? That will inform perhaps how you select your clothing. So these are the questions that you answer to inform your decision. And you frequently refer to a data source. So that's an example kind of to put it in context. Here are just a couple of examples of decisions that when we've been facilitating the use of this tool that have come up. So we ask, so what are your upcoming decisions? You know, our colleagues have mentioned, well, I need to allocate resources across the states in my country or across the districts in my region or among facilities in my district. Perhaps another instance was our colleagues needed to revise their orphans and vulnerable children's programs, the approaches the program had to emphasizing the fostering of orphaned children and adoption of orphaned children. Another group had to develop and institute workplace policies on HIV/AIDS in all the institutions in their states, and another group had to hire and allocate staff to facilities. So these are examples of the types of decisions that individuals face in the health field. Now, question, as I mentioned, how does the question inform the decision? Here are some examples of programmatic questions that individuals have been faced with. And what's important here is we divide between division and question, because depending on who you're working with or what your immediate need is, sometimes you don't have an upcoming decision to make. It's more of you have questions about your program that you need to answer in order to monitor the service delivery in your region. So for example, you might want to know, gee, what percentage of HIV-positive pregnant women in my care are actually delivering in health facilities? And by answering this question, it could lead you down the road to a decision to change the way your facility is functioning. Another example would be, what percentage of clients starting antiretroviral therapy are lost to follow-up, and are the number of family planning clients decreasing or increasing? So these are more monitoring questions. These are more questions about what is happening, how am I doing, so that you even know if you need to take action or make a decision. So here is what the framework for linking data with action version 2 looks like. A lot of the same columns as before, a couple of additional little reoriented. First column, you see the programmatic question, as we discussed what that is. The data source that would inform that question. So here you can actually list out what that data source might be, because there might be multiple sources. So this is really the crux of this tool. You get to link your information need with your data source. You can even specify what the indicator is from that data source. The next column is the timeline for when you need to conduct the analysis that will answer that question. The next column indicates the decision maker. If your analysis suggests change or action, this is where you would list that decision maker that would take that action. And then once again, we have the communication channel, the next column, as we did in version 1. And then lastly, the last column is the decision or the action that would be taken based on everything else you filled out in the previous columns. And most likely, you would fill in this column after you've filled in the first three. So this is where it comes in to play, that we consider this tool to be a management tool. You update it with your decision and your action after it has happened. And you can even keep adding questions to the far left column where you have your programmatic question as they come up, as they surface. Let's look at an example. In a recent, just last week, I was facilitating one of these, and the question came up of, are high-risk populations accessing condoms? They were unsure. So the data source was a specific indicator form, as listed in the next column. The third column, they indicated the actual indicator, that was indicator number 5 from that form. The timeline for analysis was indicated. The specific decision maker was indicated. The communication channel, and as you can see, the decision action is to be determined, because the analysis has yet to be completed. So the point with this specific question is it's a question that they need to answer quarterly in their context to really be able to make data-informed decisions. At one point, we even discussed this. A second question was, the first one being, are my high-risk populations accessing condoms? In general, they wanted to know the number of condoms being accessed. But the secondary question was, am I meeting the need of my high-risk population with condoms? And there we were discussing bringing in an additional data source, which would be the number of sex workers and men who have sex with men in that specific catchment area. So if that was the question, you know, we'd list the second question and the second data source. So not only does this framework help you identify your question, but it also helps you identify subsequent questions, more sophisticated questions that can really help you monitor your programs. Now, each framework is helpful that it lists out what you need, what your questions are, what you need to do, who's going to do it. But there are obviously many steps that come to that are involved in conducting an analysis of data from multiple sources, as you saw in version 2, or considering version 1 if you need to develop communication channels and disseminate the suggestions for action to your decision makers. These are things that have to happen. So it's helpful to have an action plan to list out some of those activities. And I have a sample action plan here that we use for both versions. I'm going to show it filled out for version 2. So let's go back to that example I showed a few slides ago. The question was, are high-risk populations accessing condoms? And they indicated the data source and the specific indicator that had to be reviewed to answer that question. So here, it takes that and breaks it down into steps for who has to do what to ensure that that analysis gets completed. So you'll see under the action steps, number 1, collate logs, the condom logs, at the district level and submit them to the region. And this individual, Mr. Jones, is the M&E person responsible to do that by a specific date. And we have an output indicator here, which so you will have documentation that that step was actually implemented, which is that you'll see that the logs are collated at the regional level. Second step is to analyze and submit data from the logs and prepare data for presentation and discussion. And here we have an individual, a date, and even we even had specified the types of graphs we wanted to see here. So we got into a lot of detail, which I didn't list for this example, but it helps you identify how you even want to present and communicate that information. And our output indicator would be that the presentation of these data at specific meetings, and that would be through the meeting minutes. You could document that. Number 4 is to make recommendations or not. I mean, it does depend on what you see in your analysis for changes to condom, just to changes in the condom distribution program. We have an individual, we have a name. And then, of course, implement the recommendations, follow up on recommendations to document if they are implemented. And all of these are to be determined, considering we just had this workshop last week. So that's how you would list it out. And the last step is to repeat steps 1 through 6, because this is a question that this group of professionals wanted answered regularly, so they would be able to monitor their programs to see if they needed to take action. So we, under the date completed, it is indicated that this should happen quarterly. So there's an example of an action plan. We highly recommend the use of these action plans as a way to ensure that the work continues that happened around the framework for linking data with action. It's very important to encourage the use of the action plan. Data use is not a one-time event. You know, you can't just sit down, have a conversation, look at some data, and make a decision. It involves multiple people, as we mentioned earlier, from different disciplines, data users, data producers, that often even can come from different program areas. So it really is a huge coordination effort to effectively use data in decision making. And these people need to know and understand what their role is in the process. And that's where the frameworks and the action plans can help do that if they're used regularly as a management tool. So now I would like to just quickly bring us back to some of the other tools that we have on measure evaluation in data demand and use, many of which we have already discussed in other contexts. And I'd like to just kind of comment on how these link together. When you do a framework for linking data with action, it's helpful sometimes to start with the stakeholder engagement tool, as you see under the first bullet here, to understand who you need to bring into your data use effort. So you can do that there. And then some of the other tools you would use, perhaps, in addition to help really improve the context around this greater use effort. So I just wanted to mention that some of them do link together. So now we're going to talk about some specific field applications before we get into questions. And Nicole Judice, one of our data demand and use specialists on measure evaluation, will first talk about.
Good morning and good afternoon to all of you. I'm happy to talk about our work in Nigeria using the framework. Let's see. I want to go to the next slide, and it's not working. Okay, there we go. Sorry about that. One of the key points, I think, that is relevant for all of the tools, all of the data demand and use tools on measure evaluation, but I would say is especially relevant for this framework, is the possibilities for adaptation. And I will provide a few examples of that. We have adapted the tool by moving around columns. We've adapted the tool by starting with different points of entry. For instance, rather than starting with a programmatic question in some settings and with some stakeholders, it may be easier to first think about the different decision makers that they are trying to influence. All of this will depend on the individual context, the organization that's using the tool. In Nigeria, we've used the framework at different levels, from clinical and service delivery to the program and organizational level, the state and the national level. And these were through both coaching settings and then also in team-based workshops. So with our clinical and service delivery example, we used this with an organization, a project in Nigeria, and we brought together clinicians, program managers, and the strategic information or M&E related staff together in the room to discuss how services are being provided and how clinicians and clinical advisors on behalf of the project could better understand the services that they are providing and how they could work towards improvement. This opportunity to link the data users and the data producers was essential because they were typically working around program management oriented questions and had less discussion at that clinical level or at that quality improvement level. So we asked these data users, the clinicians and clinical advisors, to talk about what kinds of questions they had about the services being provided at the facilities. And the SI advisors were able to say, well, yes, we collect that data regularly. I can easily provide the answer to the question that you have. This was documented then in the framework for linking data to action. At the programmatic and organizational level, we worked through coaching and also through training workshops to define questions that programs had about their management processes and about program improvement. It also was focused on resource generating opportunities, whether it be mobilizing from donors or mobilizing from resources from the community. These were three of the topics that programs and organizations focused on. And with the programs and organizations, we found that it was easiest for them to start with the stakeholders in this particular group that we worked with. They were able to define key stakeholders that they were attempting to influence, and then define the types of decisions that these stakeholders make, the questions that they may need to have answers to, and then the data that were required. And I will briefly show you an example on the next slide of that. At the state and national level, this tool was also useful in a workshop setting with teams of data users and data producers from different states, as well as data users and data producers at the national level. They came together and thought through decisions, upcoming decisions that were planned, but then also questions that they had about their program at the state level and at the national level, and used the tool, as described by Tara, to put the whole picture into a plan, the whole picture of decisions, questions, decision makers, and the data required. So here's an example from our work in Nigeria with NGOs. The stakeholders that this particular organization was focusing on were the LGA chairman. This is the local government level within a state. And the LGA chairman is responsible for resource allocation and planning, and has a great deal of power around what resources are allocated to, and what they're used to purchase. So they wanted to first focus on leveraging resources for income-generating activities that could be fostered by this particular NGO, and they also wanted to inform planning and resource allocation related to HIV in the state. So I'm going to go through first this top line related to income-generating activities. The questions that the NGOs posed were, what type of income-generating activity would actually work in this local government area? And what are the characteristics of the clients? How many clients do we need to support? By answering these questions, the NGO posited that they would be able to better inform the LGA chairman about the need for income-generating activities, and would be able to convince him or her to mobilize resources and leverage resources for these activities. The decision was planned for May 2010. That was the regular decision cycle for budgeting and resource allocation. They were interested in specific indicators that were being collected already by the NGO and by other NGOs working in the area. They were relying on their monthly reports as a source of data. They discussed how this data would be presented to the LGA chairman in both narratives, graphs, and tables, and defined when the relevant data would be available and would be made available to the LGA chairman. In the second example, this organization was focused on planning and resource allocation for HIV services. They asked, how many people access HIV counseling and testing services? What percentage of clients tested were reactive and referred for further services? And they also asked if the number of staff were adequate at these program sites. They wanted this decision to be reviewed on a monthly basis, and specified several indicators that they are routinely collecting that would be relevant for the LGA chairman. So looking at the cascade of the number of clients tested, the numbers that are receiving their results, the numbers that are reactive and referred for treatment, and the numbers for the staff, numbers that are trained in providing HIV counseling and testing. These data would be from the monthly report as the source of data, and could be presented through narratives and univariate analysis. And these data are collected and reported on a monthly basis, and so they wanted to present the LGA chairman with this data regularly. So these are just a couple of examples from our work in Nigeria, specifically with NGOs. And I think that Tara now has an example from Jamaica.
Hi, everyone. This is actually Molly. I think because of the, in the interest of time, and we want to make sure we have an opportunity to get everyone's questions and engage with our presenters, we're actually going to move to the question and answers. If we have time left at the end, Tara can talk more specifically about her experiences recently in Jamaica with using the tool. So again, you should have a Q&A pod in front of you and a place where you can type in a question. So we encourage you to go ahead and do that now if you have any questions for Nicole or for Tara. Also, if you have microphone capabilities, you can raise your hand by going to the top of the screen where the person is and click on that, and then you'll be granted mic access and you can speak your question. So we'll give you a couple minutes to type in some questions, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Great. We have our first question from Paul Ricketts in Dominica, and I'm going to go ahead and post it so everyone can see the question. Thanks for the illuminating presentation. Do you recommend that the tool be used as part of the data dissemination activities or separately? Tara will go ahead and take that.
Thanks, Paul. That's a good question. So I assume you're referring to version 1. So if you have a specific study that you're disseminating, yes, I recommend that it be used as part of that dissemination activity. We've used this in multiple ways. So one thing we've done with the version 1 is you have your studies completed, you have your preliminary, you have your study results. We have then brought together a small group of key data users and had what we call a data interpretation workshop, where these individuals can react to what was found and provide kind of that rich commentary and that additional information that helps put those results in context that sometimes the researcher doesn't have because they do their own thing and the program people do their own thing. So in this context, you can get more information about the finding and start to define some preliminary recommendations. And then when you move to your actual dissemination meeting, those program managers, those decision makers that were part of your dissemination interpretation workshop can actually present some of the findings and help facilitate a discussion around recommendations. So it's a way to get the decision makers involved really even in the dissemination of results and start generating, you know, some stronger buy-in for what was found and those linkages to the program. We've also used this tool before the study's implemented. So we will have specific study questions, right? So you have your research question in that first column. Obviously, you don't know your finding, but we can even list then at that point in time who the stakeholders might be, assuming, you know, a certain type of finding. And if you do that in advance, you can identify who you should involve in your study throughout the study process to kind of build this ownership for what the study is going to find and start building that bridge between data user and data producer.
Thank you, Tara. We'll go ahead and take Jim Tobias's question next. And his is a little long, but I'm going to go ahead and read it. He provides some great context that I think will be helpful. A lot of the decision systems seem to have a heavy focus on the temporal interventions within specific years. We see annual reports and semi-annual reports. Why not also build a spatial decision support system that would allow a radar screen of disease burden over space and time? This type of system could include national, regional, administrative boundaries, facilities, mapping of prevalence, incidence, morbidity, mortality, years of potential life lost, and other measures of disease burden that could be overlaid and examined alongside spatial interventions and evaluations of those interventions in terms of reduction of disease burden. The annual reports are often several thousand pages in length and cover shifting timeframes, targets, and achievements. It seems like a map of disease burden with layers of interventions and spatial decisions to reduce burden would be easier to read and use. It seems like spatial decision support systems would be informative in terms of understanding the burden. And I think Tara's going to go ahead and respond to that.
Hi, Jim. Great commentary. Very I would say, yeah, I agree. It would be fantastic to have this sort of what we would probably all agree is called a dashboard. You know, any sort of decision support tool is where we want to be. I mean, that's the gold standard. However, this is not the common standard in many of the places where we all work. So I think you laid out what we're all striving for. What's interesting, though, to link your commentary kind of back to this very simple tool is that even if you were designing a dashboard, a decision support tool, the first thing that you would have to sit down and agree on is what decisions is this tool supporting? What are the information needs of those decision makers? And that's the first thing, you know, you ask when you're designing something like this. So, you know, it links us back to the very simple, which is a matrix that helps you identify what your information needs are in terms of decisions and the questions that support them. So, you know, great comment. I think we would all love to see something like this in many of the contexts where we work. And the tool that we're talking about today is kind of, you know, the roots of something like Jim is referring to.
Thanks, Tara. Our next question comes from Samuel, and this one is for Nicole. Samuel writes, thank you, everyone. I really appreciate all your presentations. My question goes to Nicole. With reference to the Nigerian experience, how would this tool be effective in clinical and service delivery points when many NGOs and partners domicile their individual data capturing tools for data collection? How would I fit this framework to this situation? Thank you.
Thank you, Samuel, for this excellent question. I agree with you that many NGOs and partners are using their own data capturing tools for data collection, and that can make it difficult for aggregation of data at different levels. At that clinical and service delivery level, and within an NGO or partner who is monitoring the service delivery points, it can be used because oftentimes we find no matter what types of tools are being used for data collection, compilation, and analysis, oftentimes the capabilities are not fully utilized. The capabilities for full analysis, the capabilities for full reporting on all the different data that are being collected are often not being used. And so at that clinical and service delivery level, you could start off by asking what types of things are of interest to people in clinical positions and at the service delivery points. What do they want to know about how they are providing services? And we're not talking about the individual patient level. We're talking about a bigger picture about the overall services they are providing. how would they measure their success? How would they measure problems that they're having? These would help you to define key questions that that could then be plotted into this tool, into the framework. Oftentimes, clinicians and people providing services may not be familiar enough with the data collection systems to be able to say, well, I know I need this indicator to be able to answer this question. And so the staff at the NGO or people related to the SI field, the data producers, could help the clinicians and service delivery points to identify which indicators would help answer those key questions that they have.
Great, thank you. But Tara, while we didn't have, first I want to just see if anybody has any other specific questions that they want to write in. We're only seeing those three now, but if you have any other questions, we encourage you to go ahead and write them in now. And since we don't have time to go over in detail the Jamaica example, Tara will, though, go ahead and just provide a few comments for us on her recent experience in Jamaica. And please, we encourage you to continue writing in questions if you have any.
So I would just like to tell one little story about my experience in Jamaica last week where I was working with the National ME Unit that was part of the Ministry of Health and their regional teams. So Jamaica is divided into regions, and a lot of decision-making happens at that level. So we were all together, and we did a couple of things, but one of the things was this framework for linking data with action. Now, the regional teams have regular meetings where they get together and they talk about, you know, kind of their quarterly findings from their routine data collection. It's not comprehensive. They kind of look and see what they consider by region to be important, something that their data might be showing them. So they have a pretty well-functioning data review, data-informed decision-making cycle. But what happens, and what happens frequently, is, you know, there's kind of this rut of people look at all of their data and they have to present on their data and they get stuck in the kind of the data sea. And when we brought people together, we said, okay, forget about what you do normally and the data that you are required to discuss in plenary. Let's stop and talk about, as a region, what is it that you need to know right now? What are your pressing programmatic questions that you actually aren't getting answers to, that you're unsure if there's a problem there? And it was fascinating because it was very different from what they're currently looking at. So, for example, one region, there's an issue with a World Bank loan ending there, and the regions now, instead of receiving their ARTs from a donor, they have to, antiretroviral drugs, for those of you that aren't HIV people, they now have to purchase them themselves. So there's a panic and there's a scramble to kind of create a line item in the budget for this. But as they were sitting around in their regional teams, they realized, we have no idea what these drugs cost because we don't buy them. We don't know what the fully loaded cost is. So that was their question. That was their question, and they sat around as a region, and they talked about who would have that information, where would they get it, who could analyze it, by when, and it was really important that they identified their decision makers because they were outside of their regular circle of people that they work with in the region and at the national. They're going out into like procurement and national pharmacies. So it was really a great exercise because the tool helped them to identify their priorities. Now, mind you, they're going to still do what they do every quarter. Very important to monitor your programs. But, you know, this tool is intended to help you focus on those key priorities. And it should be revisited. You should come up with regular, with these questions every quarter, depending on what, you know, what level of the health system you're functioning at. But maybe every 6 months, even yearly. So it really is a helpful tool for identifying those priorities.
Thanks, Tara. We have another question from Samuel that I'll go ahead and take because I think I can provide a specific example. He says, please, is the version 2 of the framework an improvement on version 1, or are they two distinct versions? I think the version 2 looks more user-friendly and result-oriented. They are two distinct versions, Samuel, and it just depends on where you're starting in the process. Tara and Nicole gave good examples of how they were using the tool to generate the demand for more data and figuring out what are the pressing decisions that need to be made around certain programmatic areas and questions that need to be answered, and then figuring out what data are already available in the system to answer those questions and maybe what additional data needs there are. But last week, a program I work with in northern Nigeria, the T-SHIP project, they just used this framework for linking data with action, and they actually used version 1. We just recently completed a study on factors affecting use of long-acting family planning methods. And so we had the study findings completed, and we brought together a group of data producers and data users all together in one place, and we had people split into small groups, four small groups, and review different data sets that came out of the study. and then go through the research findings, and based on what they found in the study, really think about what types of interventions make sense or what improvements to the program could be made. So that's an example where, you know, a specific research study was conducted, there were findings, and we wanted to engage the users and producers together to figure out how to move forward with those findings and use them programmatically. And Tara's going to add one more thing.
I mentioned earlier that this tool is really a tool to help promote certain strategies that we believe are critical to improving data-informed decision-making. And those strategies are bringing data users and data producers together, which doesn't happen enough, regularly, or with the right people. Two, starting with what you need to know and linking either what you need to know with the data or starting with the data and linking it to action. So it's just And then, lastly, focusing on the communication of that finding or that analysis and that decision. So either version, they're all rooted in the same place, kind of promoting some of these best practices in data use, these guiding principles. So if you want to take both of them and pick from each one to suit your context, we highly recommend adaptation. You'll notice that what Nicole presented is not what's in the toolkit. If I had gone over Jamaica, you would have seen it's a little different than the toolkit too. We twist these around depending on the context and what the need is.
Thanks, Tara. So Samuel's last comment here is a perfect segue into our final slides. He asks, how can I get a soft copy of the slides and the slides on stakeholder engagement and information use map? So all of these webinars are being recorded. If you go to www.measureevaluation.org/DDU, you will see our webinar series there and a link to each of the webinars and with the recording and the slides. So you'll have those available to you. Also on our website, you can find our data demand and use toolkit. For every tool we're presenting, there is a document anywhere from 30 to 50 pages with very detailed instructions, templates, checklists for you to use if you're applying the tool. Also, we have data demand and use training resources, which we'll be discussing in an upcoming webinar, but those are available on our website. Our next webinar is going to be on February 21st. That's next Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Nicole Judice is going to be discussing the 7 steps to use routine information to improve HIV/AIDS programs, and it's a guide for program managers. So we really encourage those of you who have been participating to please join us for that next webinar. Also, we just want to mention and give a brief nod to our data demand and use community of practice. It's a very helpful resource. We have over 700 members, I believe, or maybe even more than that, where there's various discussions that happen periodically throughout the year around different data demand and use issues that people experience in the field. There's things like job announcements, resources available around DDU. So what you can do is send an email to listserv@unc.edu, leave the subject field blank, and in the body of the message type exactly as it is listed here, Data Use Net. And then you'll be added to our listserv, and you'll hear about all sorts of things related to DDU. And our presenter contact information is listed here. We encourage those of you who have questions about application for the field to get in touch with any of us, and we'd be happy to help you. And Tara wants to add one more thing.
Also, please, you'll notice that there's a closing comments box here. And we see people are typing, thank you for the great feedback. We would like any and all kind of feedback on the webinar. That would be fantastic. Please, if you're willing, leave your email address. If you think you might use one of these tools, we'd love to get back in touch with those people who are actually using them. We have no idea when, how, if, you know, the experience with our tools. So that would be fantastic. So please consider leaving your email address. So thank you all very much. It was, once again, a great webinar, and we'll see you all next week, I hope. Have a good day.